Hello?
Hi there.
Hi there.
How are you? I'm Holly.
Hi, Holly. I'm Lynn.
Hi, Lynn. Do we have any
Hi.
Help? Might just be your me tonight, or so far.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Where are you located?
Oh, I'm in Florida.
Florida. I'm in Colorado.
Ooh, Colorado's so pretty. Where in Colorado?
I'm actually just south of Denver in a town called Greenwood Village.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's one of those small little communities that developed a while ago, and it still has open space and, you know,
kind of
a country feel.
Nice. I was in Denver, and I stayed in Colorado Springs, but I had flown into Denver. Would I have passed through you?
You would have gone right past us, yes, because you probably went 225 to I-25.
I don't remember. I was with somebody that used to live there, so I just let him navigate. But I went right by.
You went right by. I mean, it's just a strip of property that goes like from Orchard to Bellevue and east to west. And it's just, you know, nice little place.
Yeah, it was such a beautiful trip. I had gone in December, so there was some snow on the ground. We went on some hikes in the mountains, went up Pikes Peak, and we actually even drove over to Breckenridge.
Oh, wow, nice.
And yeah, that was so beautiful. Seeing that continental divide was just breathtaking.
It is.
We stopped in that little area. I don't know if it's like the spot that people do it or if they have multiple spots, but I could have stayed there forever. It was just so breathtaking.
It really is. I mean, these mountains are amazing. I was raised here in Denver and always used to the mountains, and then I moved to Iowa and I don't know. I flew in for an interview and then interviewed and went home. And I took the job and about a week in, I'm like, where are the mountains? I'm like, there's nothing but corn around here.
Well, hi, everyone. Welcome. This is Dave Kruger. Thank you for your promptness. I appreciate it. And we have some early birds. welcome to authoring your first book. I hope you got my email of the two questions, and I'm interested in if any of you have a response right now. One, if we were to sit down right now, face-to-face, what's the most important question you have about this topic? And secondly, if you were to walk away from this seminar series after our fourth seminar saying it was one of the best you'd ever attended, what would you walk away with? Any responses?
I sent you my responses.
I haven't been back to see it yet. I haven't been able to tell me right now.
Oh, okay. This is Lynn Baginski. Nice to meet you, David.
Welcome.
My response is, at the end of the class, I want to be able to walk away with at least a final copy that I can turn into an e-book. And I've been at this for a long time, and all I've run into are these people who are, quote, experts, and they want to charge you a lot of money. And I've done it a couple of times, and I've ended up with nothing much better than what I started with. So I'm looking for kind of a streamlined, wisdom-like outline, how to get from, you know, first draft completed, edited to ebook.
All right. You're at the right place. We're going to do that. Each of the four seminars, we're going to look at the art, the craft, the science, and the business in each of the four seminars of writing your first book, and look at the various ways to go about that, the various options and how to choose among them, as well as some of the aspects of the actual craft of writing in addition to the business. So we will be addressing that, and I think you'll have, with your participation, a pathway to do that and a clearer pathway. So thanks for mentioning that. I appreciate it.
Hi, David, it's Spencer Berger calling, and I'm glad to be here. Thanks for your email this
Welcome.
Morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I echo what I just heard from that lady. Thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome.
All right, super. Excellent.
Hi, David.
I'm George West. I'm checking in.
Welcome. Go ahead. Any response, George, to either of those two questions?
Yeah, I'm a minute or two late, so I missed the question.
What's the most important question you have about this topic, and 4 weeks from now, what would you like to walk away having accomplished?
Well, the most important question is once I get the book written, how do I go about distributing it or selling it?
Okay.
And
there are nine pathways to that and counting. So we're going to look at which of those may make sense and how to do the one that fits best for you. And there are different ways, as you know. I've done each of them except one. And I think we can have some fun exploring that. So thank you for that. Who else? Either of those two questions. Anybody want to log in?
Hi, my name is John. Oh, yeah? Go ahead.
Start over, please, with your name.
Okay. Andrew from Sydney. Can you hear me?
Have a little bit of a bad reception. Try it again, please.
Try again? It's Andrew from Sydney. Can you hear me?
Oh, welcome. Hey, Andrew. How you doing?
Great
to hear from you. How's everything going?
Oh, just amazing.
All right. Excellent. Well, you're sounding pretty good for Australia these days, I'll tell you. Welcome.
I'm just looking forward to finding that pathway to get that first book out and helping to crystallize what I've got a few concepts in my head, but to crystallize what's appropriate at this stage of the journey and where the book fits in as a tool to build your profile and just get that whole thing and get motivated to start putting down this paragraph to make it happen.
Well, all right then. You're at the right place. That's great. I'm glad you could join us, and I'm glad you could join us live time.
Thank you.
Super.
Thank you.
I know it's in the wee hours.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, this is
Abby. Abby.
I'm sorry, this is
Abby Beck.
I'm sorry, start over. I didn't hear your name, please.
My name is Abby Beck.
Welcome. Hey, go ahead.
Hi, Dave. I'm in one of your other classes.
Yeah.
The first question really just what the most important question I have about the topic, I think, is how to market the book. And for question two, I'd hope to walk away with kind of a step-by-step game plan.
Okay. All right. We'll deal with the marketing in the seminar on the business of writing and stepwise, more about the craft and some in the science. So we'll definitely address that. Anybody else? Thank you for all your responses. This is very helpful for me.
Hi. My name is Jonathan Wilcox, and I'm phoning in from Vancouver, B.C. in Canada.
Welcome. Okay.
Thank you. And the most important question I have about this topic is, how do I approach my approach so that I know which book I'm writing and why and for whom?
Okay.
And the next piece, 4 weeks from now, what would I like to have accomplished? I would have liked to have accomplished a consistent commitment to this process and to have a book complete in 2017.
Okay. All right. For the first part, I think you'll have to pick one and go with it. We'll address that and proceed with it. So thank you, Jonathan.
You know, I suppose it's the marketing audience which will help me figure out my journey towards that.
Okay. We'll go cool about that in a systematic way. Super.
Hi, Dr. Kruger. It's Paula from Brazil.
I'm sorry. Say your name again.
Paula from Brazil.
Oh, welcome. Hey, Paula, how are you?
I'm fine, and you, Dr. Kruger?
I'm great to hear from you. Yeah, what's going on?
I decided to enjoy you in this journey, these seminars. And my questions will be answered along the way. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent. That is the preeminent aspect that I want to pass on to you. I'll do it right at the beginning. This is from my favorite grandmother. If you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. So you have the secret to start with. So that's great, okay? And welcome. It's great. I'm glad you could join us. I know you're looking at a different time challenge from Andrew in Australia. Who else? Anybody else with any responses to those questions or any just... check in.
Hi, David. It's Adam Houtman. How you doing?
Adam, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Great.
Hi, Dave. This is...
And one other follow-up. Adam, is there anything that you wanted to be sure that we cover?
Well, what I'm going to do is my focus on this is how do I utilize the same skills in terms of writing a book, creating the story for business transactions and, you know, my own stories that I'm telling myself repetitively.
I think that's excellent because the whole approach to story, and in fact, you remind me, I want to begin with some questions about the brain science of story just to be sure that I have everyone's attention. So that's going to be a very useful application, and a book will be lanyard. So excellent. There was one other question I want to cover, and then I want to move into our material. I heard someone else began.
Hi, this is Audrey Portman, a psychiatrist.
Welcome. Yeah. Hey, how are you?
Good, good. I really don't have any questions right now. As you know, I'm working on a book.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's a spectacular book, and I thought it was already complete, but
It is, but I want to talk to you offline about the brain science of, compliance with patients.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. I'm going to put us on lecture mode. I'm going to preserve some time at the beginning and the end of each of our one-hour seminars. Oh, and to let you know, in terms of the schedule, we're going to meet this week, next week, and the third week, the 17th, I believe. The 17th, we will not meet. I'm going to be running in Boston Marathon with my daughter then. So we're going to have our third and fourth classes, the 24th and the first. So I'll send a reminder of that, but just kind of a heads up for planning. and we'll have a discussion at the beginning and the end, and I'm going to go on lecture mode so you don't have to worry about the background noise. I'm going to begin in a different way than I planned to ask you four questions. Jot down your answer. This is not in the outline. I hope you've each been to the page to download and print the outline and the work pages, and that's going to be, you have the link for where the recordings of the seminars will be posted, usually within 24 hours for online playback. So here are the four questions. What initially draws us into a story that we want to read or hear? Just jot down a single answer or a phrase. First thing that comes to your mind. Two, what sustains our engagement as a listener or reader? Three, what do we unconsciously respond to when we hear or read a story that really captures our attention? And four, what determines a bestseller from a non-seller? We know from the brain science of story that there is one answer to all of these questions based on how our brains are wired to perceive and process stories. And the story secret is this. From the first sentence, we must want to know what happens next. This is what sustains a listener or reader's efforts or a client's, if you're talking to a client. This is the neuroscience secret of everything from bestsellers to successful product and service launches, to want to know what happens next, because that's what engages the dopamine system, the pleasure chemical, to anticipate pleasure. So that's why the things that most engage you usually begin with a question or with a story. So think about that as we talk about the various aspects. So the first seminar, we're going to talk about the art of writing. So the backstory here. It's been said that just about every smart, sensitive person has a desire to write a book because writing is a natural way for a contemporary person to learn, express, integrate, to really feel alive. More than 80% of adults in America say they want to publish. Slightly less than 1% actually do. And that includes articles, editorials, not just books. So first decide if you have a message, a blog series, an article, or a book. A message is a written or spoken communication of an idea or point of view. An article can convey a message. A short series of blog posts can succinctly spread an even complex message. A nonfiction book builds a case, develops, and illustrates a theme. The book needs a story to hold its richness. It carries the reader along in a course of reason, illustrates the application. So the story evolves an argument with complexity and depth. Now, the irony, as Seth Godin points out, the market demands that you summarize your book in a blog post, ideally in a single sentence. Traditional advice has been to write about what you know. In my view, here's another more exciting and creative possibility. Write to see what you have to say. Write about what you most want to learn or need. Everything that I've ever written, from the books to white papers to articles to training, has been what I have most wanted to learn, and that will determine what I do next. It's determining the book I'm working on right now, what I most want to learn. At a conference many years ago, when I was still practicing psychoanalysis, I was talking with a friend who was himself an excellent clinician. As we discussed the paper just presented, I asked when he was going to write a paper. He said, "I'm going to wait until I'm sure I have something to say." I knew at that moment that he would never present a paper at that or any other conference or write a paper. And that unfortunately turned out to be true. Those of you who are trained or mentored with me know that not knowing anything has, of course, never stopped me from talking. So we're going to have to discuss how to write in a systematic, structured way for effective and successful results. We'll talk about what happens next when you schedule an appointment with yourself to write. And as I mentioned, we're going to discuss four broad aspects: the art, the craft, the science, and the business of authoring your book. In short, how to tell and sell your story. So first, commitment. A prerequisite is a commitment and a game plan. So first, make your commitment and your game plan match. You know the words of somebody who's not totally committed. I'll try, I should, I ought to, I want to. Versus the words of somebody who's committed, I will. One of the great philosophers of the 20th century said, try not, do or do not, there is no try. That was, of course, Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back. And here's the Texas version of the difference between a 99% commitment and a 100% commitment. A fish has no use for a lake that has water 99% of the time. USA Today did a study on people who made New Year's resolutions. They found two groups: those who made a New Year's resolution and wrote it down, and those who made one but neglected to write it down. What they found, those who did not put their goal in writing, 4% kept their resolution. Those who wrote down their resolution, 44% kept it. Over a tenfold difference. When you write down a commitment to, for example, complete your book, neuroscience teaches us that the brain works like a travel agent. The first two questions a travel agent asks: where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? Program your brain to complete the book by a particular date. How much do you really want to tell and sell your story? One unknown author had a collection of heartwarming stories that he thought might make a good book. He shopped his idea to every publisher he could find. No success. He presented to 141 publishers in all, was rejected by every one of them. He believed in the book, though, but he was repeatedly told that it just wouldn't appeal to audiences. He decided to publish it himself and began selling it out of the back of his car. It had a really unlikely title, Chicken Soup for the Soul. I personally heard Jack Canfield tell this story, and I know that today he sold $1.6 billion worth of books. So, in terms of a vision, how do you write a book? Let's consider a related question. Those of you who have done training with me are familiar with. How do you find a yellow Jeep? A group of executives asked me to present a seminar to them on writing a first book. The first thing I asked was, have any of you ever seen a yellow Jeep in the last month? There were 24 people present. One person raised his hand. Then I went through a visualization exercise with them. Close your eyes now, just briefly, to do this exercise with me. Picture a yellow Jeep, the specific detail of how it looks. As you walk toward it, walk all the way around it. Look at the tires, the body, the trim. As you come back to open the driver's door, feel how cool and solid the handle feels. Look at the seat, the steering wheel, the dash. As you sit in the seat, imagine what it's like to drive it as you look through the windshield. Smell the interior. Feel how firmly the seat is holding you. As you turn it on, listen to the sound of the motor. Feel the vibration in your body of the motor running. Then, as you turn it off and get out, hear how solidly the door sounds. And as you walk away, turn around one more time and take in the entire Jeep. Now, open your eyes. In the next week, see what happens. Of those 24 people, one of whom had seen a yellow Jeep in the last month, 22 contacted me within the first 3 days to say that they had seen a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened? What somebody sees, what appears on the radar screen, is determined by belief and assumption. A yellow Jeep is pre-programmed as possibility. The most common reason people don't write a book is they don't believe they really can. Or if they do, they don't devise a specific plan and stick to it. It's the same reason that people don't earn money and accumulate wealth. They don't see themselves as capable of it. I can tell you how much money somebody's going to make by listening to their assumptions. Once you genuinely see yourself completing your book, all sorts of things begin to happen. You've already coded your radar for writing your book, including listening right now, and we'll discuss how to evolve that vision. So here's an exercise on choice. This is based on the principle that it takes just as much energy to construct a negative belief as it does to construct a positive belief. We're on lecture mode, so nobody can hear you. I'd like you to say these things out loud. This is going to feel a little goofy, but I'd like you to say out loud two things that you can't do. For example, I can't finish this article I'm writing. I can't get the clutter out of my office. I'm going to pause for you to say out loud two things that you can't do. Now, I'd like you to restate each out loud, but substitute I want for I can't, as in, I won't finish this article I'm writing. I won't get the clutter out of my office. Say that out loud with substituting won't. Now, the last thing I'd like you to do, I'm going to pause for you to say this sentence out loud three times. I am always free to change my mind. Out loud three times. Now you're aware of choice. All you have to do is the next right thing. Once you begin thinking about your specific book, you begin to hear things in different ways. You begin to hear examples. You begin to think about stories. Incidents become vignettes. Ideas begin to crystallize. You think about what you want to say and become aware of how you want to say it. You even become a better listener, which makes you a better speaker. Now, there's a caveat here. No one ever sits down to write a book. It's impossible. You sit down to write a few sentences, maybe a page. Mozart never sat down to write an opera. He had a medley in his head and let it speak to him until the story of the music emerged. If you write one page a day and are committed to do that, after 1 year, you have a rough draft of 365 pages. Let's talk about perseverance. The most important thing about having a goal, about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick with it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. We know from coaching that a goal can be beneficial because it allows us to know where we are, where we want to go, how to measure progress along the way, and what's detour and what's distraction. One extra degree of effort in business and in life can also separate the good from the great. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach's Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. At 211 degrees, water's hot. One more degree and it boils. So to get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. Lord Eliot put it in a very simple way. Perseverance is not a long race. It's many short races, one after another. So here are, and this is all in your outline, here are some guiding questions. There are three goals I believe are helpful to clarify before you start writing. What you want to write, what you want to gain, and who do you want to reach? This is all about purpose. So here are some reflections to begin your first book. Now, this is before you begin your first chapter even. One, write for a specific preferred audience. Now, you may want everybody to read it. Do you remember how in the beginning you wanted to coach everybody about everything, and it felt like an amputation to narrow it down until it paid off? Two, envision your audience. Create a persona for two or three prototypes of those you write for. Speak directly to them. That's the way I've written everything I've written, from books to white papers to articles, even to complex emails, is I envision who I'm speaking to or a group I'm speaking to, and I dictate it because I do better talking. We'll talk more about that. I upload it for a penny and a quarter word and get it transcribed. Three, write a focused, compelling, understandable, and enjoyable conversation. That's what writing is a conversation. For me, it helps more that I can talk it because it's really more like a conversation because I'm envisioning the person. Four, what is your aha, your good news? Five, what will your book do uniquely well, better than any other one that's out there? Six, consider reaching out for opinion molders and feedback, like focus groups. Get feedback. Writing is kind of a isolated deal unless you find ways to get feedback or have groups that regularly give you feedback. And seven, an initial step to create your book is to fully accept the reality of the process of writing and to evolve your identity as an author. I'll share a personal experience that was pivotal for me in case it might be helpful to anyone. Many, many years ago, I was writing Making Memories, Reflections on Parenting from the Heart of a Father and the Mind of a Psychoanalyst. I went to the Iowa Writers Conference, a summer workshop, and shared with my group my dilemma. I was still practicing psychoanalysis at the time. I wanted to write from the heart, but needed to use examples from my experiences as a parent. But I didn't want to burden my present and future psychoanalytic patients with knowing too much about me personally. I was still kind of laboring under the notion then that psychoanalysts think they have to remain anonymous to be a blank screen onto which the patient projects himself or herself. I got some immensely helpful feedback, and it was this. When you're writing, you're not an analyst, you're not a father, you're an author. Therefore, write as your subtitle says, from your heart and your mind. It was immensely liberating for me at the time. It sounds kind of goofy in retrospect, but I mention it in case it might be helpful in any way. Eight, you're thinking and feeling a book into existence. Then you'll craft it into a powerful message with a memorable story. Nine, what you imagine guides your endeavor. You learn what your book is about by thinking and writing. And 10, you get your book done well by willing yourself to plan, organize, think, revise, and along the way throughout to tolerate confusion and uncertainty. The principle is do whatever it takes. So, think about an exercise to address obstacles. Consider scheduling a brainstorming with yourself to do this exercise. Make four vertical columns on a page. Some of you are familiar with this. It's a neural conditioning chart, the way of rewiring your brain. In the first column to the left, call it emotional triggers. And then the second column, usual response. So look at and write down any emotional triggers that may set you into a cycle of rumination or negativity or stuckness. Like, well, I've never written a book before, so I don't know how to do it. This is too much. I don't know where to start. Then look at what your usual response is, which may be to stop and go to the mall. The third column is create a mantra, a way of getting grounded and centered. We'll return to this and do this a little bit more systematically. But the primary ways of getting grounded and centered are focus and physiology, such as a focus phrase like relaxed and powerful, and a deep breath for relaxation. And then write your ideal response, your ideal behavior. That may be to have a one-hour stint each day for writing, and it may be scheduled at a specific time, whatever your ideal behavior is. So this is the specific adaptive behavior that you desire. It's an alternative to the usual behavior of what you will do. Make sure it's behavior and not outcome, something that you can specifically engage, not avoiding something negative, but something positively that you engage. So what this is, the first and second columns, let's call that the old story. And the third and fourth columns, let's call that the new story. The idea is to cue your radar to non-adaptive triggers or ideas in order to immediately substitute desired behaviors. By doing this, you don't further etch the old behavior in your brain, but instead reprogram new behavior. Remember, neuroscience tells us that we get what we focus on, not what we want. So be sure you focus on the right thing. Now, let's look at the who, what, where, when, and how of writing. First, the who. Who is it that you write for? Your most authentic answer needs to be yourself. When you speak in writing, you do so to an intended audience. So who is your audience? If you can, identify the specific audience you'll address. The more specifically you envision the reader, the more specifically and meaningfully you'll be able to have a conversation with that person or that group. John Updike put his very simply, I write to the person a little to the left and below the center of Kansas. One strategy is to envision a persona, a characterization of the ideal reader. Develop that persona fully, just like somebody does who's writing fictional characters. Who that person is, location, age, occupation, marital family status. By the time you've developed two or three ideal personas of your intended audience, you have an idea who it is you're speaking to. Your conversation comes alive as you talk to them. Adam, who we heard from, may have that persona as a couple of executives that he's presenting a business idea to, or maybe writing a business book to appeal to their group. Make it easy to connect, create a conversation, a community. The what? You have to respect the marketplace. Be attuned to needs. Provide answers. Make your approaches to answers accessible. Be attuned to what someone else wants and needs. And beyond that, you have to be true to your own story. Who you are is your gift to your readers. And writing is not a special language. It's not a gift you were born with. Writing is thinking on paper. Anyone who thinks clearly should be able to work at writing clearly. So here's a what exercise to think before you write. Sit down and think about your idea before you begin to write about it. How will you move it from current vague idea to a rich three-dimensional book? Think about what you'll write along these lines. What are you trying to communicate? What form should your book take? What chapters will it be divided into? What should go into each chapter? What will you draw from your experiences to enhance the book, to tell stories? And what research will you do to deepen its qualities? You're not in the business of finding readers for your words. You're in the business of finding words for your readers. And this is the process writers don't usually report, you don't usually see, the thinking part, the preparation, writers may in an interview say that, well, their book just came out or just came to them. It doesn't happen that way. I can promise you that. Writing is a creative pleasure, but it's work. The only thing harder than writing is rewriting. But again, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Let's look at the where. Decide where you'll write. Virginia Woolf emphasized the importance of having a room of one's own. Get your space ready. Protect it from intrusions and noise. Maybe put one or two things in there that will represent your commitment to writing. During the time you commit to write, protect that space and time from intrusions. Unplug your telephone. Your voicemail will take care of messages. There are a few true emergencies in life. Talking to your buddy about who got kicked off American Idol last night is not one of them, at least not during your writing time. Guard your writing time to allow full immersion, an immersion in the state of mind of flow that's an ideal state for creativity. Protect your time because you'll have to pay for every yes with at least one no. A yes if you agree to have that time interrupted or compromised. Let's look at the when. Make an appointment with yourself. Choose a schedule for writing that you'll be loyal to no matter what. Everyone on earth has one thing in common. Our choices in life define us. Those who provide service to others, such as authors, money managers, therapists, leaders, teachers, coaches, and especially parents, have their answers counted many times. What will yours be? Make it matter. Determine when you'll write. When I had a full psychoanalytic practice and saw a dozen people each day, plus teaching, people would ask me when I found time to write. My answer was to say as gently as possible, I never found time to write. I created time. I grew up on a farm and ranch and got up before the sun to feed cattle. Rising early is still natural for me. During all of my years of parenting, I still got up early on Saturday and Sunday morning and had 2 to 3 hours to write before my kids woke up. By then, I was fully ready to turn off my dictaphone and roll on the floor with them or play outside the rest of the day. Later, during their adolescence, I would be totally available in order to be rendered insignificant by them. So decide what time of day you write best. Know your biorhythms. Think about when you're most creative. Consider what may be a natural time to write and when you have most of an inclination to do things like editing. Those are two different parts of the brain, creative writing and editing. They deserve separate, distinct times. The time of the day that you'll do best for creative endeavors is not the time of the day you're going to do best for things like editing. Decide when to do each. And here's my best advice to each of you. Just start writing. Start simple. Start slow. Start now. Perhaps the most literate answer to the when question was offered over 900 years ago by Rashi, the great Torah commentator, who said, whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. Let's look at the how. Recognize your natural style of writing. Are you visual, auditory, or kinesthetic as a learner and processor? Respect that style as you write. Some of you will do best visually, like at a keyboard, seeing the words appear on the screen. Or if you're primarily an auditory person, as I am, use a dictation device, because that's the way I create, is to talk, to see what I'm going to have to say. I've written all of my first drafts of anything by dictating them. In that way, as I talk, I envision a person or audience to speak to. It's natural for me because that's the way I spend my day, talking to people. Earlier, I did it in therapy and analysis, and now I do it in coaching. I no longer use a secretary to transcribe the dictation, as I mentioned. I do it on a digital recorder and upload it to iDictate to translate it. And I have a name for each of the piles when I get it back and put it in piles, chapters. If you think you'll do something better by writing it out longhand, get a lot of yellow pads. I think the ones with really thick backs make for better writers. Get a bunch of yellow pads and write it out. Consider also your work and performance styles. Now, those elements aren't talked about as much, but I consider them really useful in writing as well as in coaching. You'll find a white paper on this subject on my website under the Articles tab. It's called Toward Brain Hardware Optimization. The website is mentorpath.com. It's more than I have time to go into now, but I think you'll enjoy it to look at work and performance styles, even to look at considering things like neurolinguistic programming. One suggestion, whenever you have an idea, even if it doesn't come during your specified writing time, write it down. Capture it. Get it ultimately into typed form. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory. And unless you write it down to review, after that, it's gone. So wherever I am and wherever I can possibly sit down, I have a little digital dictation device, two in my office, one in my car, one at my ranch, one in my truck, and I have a little moleskin. You know, the little things you can buy, they're like 3x5. I have that in my cargo pocket, my shorts or pants, depending on the season, where I can write down anything that comes to me. So I always have something with me to capture something, because you think you'll always remember it, and then when you get home and try to remember it, it's almost there, but it's not quite. Think about that and plan for having something to always write down or always dictate. Haven't you had the experience of thinking about a great phrase? It's a really catchy way to say something and think, man, I'm sure I'll remember this. And later comes and you don't. Now, one principle we know from coaching, when people are asked what they intend to do, they're more likely to act according to how they answer. When you ask people the day before an election if they intend to vote, it increases the probability that they're going to vote by 25%. In a study of 40,000 subjects, the question, do you intend to buy a new car, increased the purchase rates over the subsequent 4 months by 35%. Another factor that increases the likelihood of desirable behavior is by asking people whether they intend to eat certain foods, or diet, or exercise. One of the most basic steps in coaching is to make sure each session includes framing an action plan for the next week that the client intends, commits to do. Think about that with yourself, with your writing. Your commitment to yourself. Write down your who, what, where, when, and how. Specifically address your intention, your plan. Make an appointment with yourself and keep it with the same loyalty that you do an appointment with your doc, your dentist, your accountant, or showing up for us to do this seminar. Writing doesn't come about through inspiration. It happens when you decide to sit down and write. Clarissa Pinkola Estes said, "To be ourselves causes us to be exiled by many others, and yet to comply with what others want causes us to be exiled from ourselves." Now, a word about creativity. There is an innate natural energy inside each of us to create. When we open ourselves to creativity, we allow our internal experience to flow through whatever channels are natural: words, pictures, movement. Creativity is a natural part of life. As you begin the process of your book, don't compare your inside with somebody else's outside. Somebody else's outside may be a complete book, and when you pick up that book to read it, it's going to seem daunting. That author did not begin with a complete book. That author did not sit down to write a book. He or she began with an idea, then crafted a few lines, then reworked it again and again. A great deal of thinking and writing, a good deal of thinking and a great deal of reading are required in writing. a book. Writers, in discussing their books after they're published, usually omit or minimize the amount of work that had to go into completion of it. We can call that a nostalgia bias. Nostalgia is remembering not as it was, but better than it was. Airbrushed memories set on an idealized stage. When we compare our insight, the machinations, the struggles that we go through, our hope for our book, with somebody else's outside who has a completed published book, it's not apples to apples. We don't take into account the true scope of the work. And again, nobody ever sits down to write a book. You sit down to write a few sentences. You sit down for an hour at your desk and you stay there at the time you've decided to commit to writing just in case some random string of words occurs to you or some expression that crosses your mind and you need to capture it. Some writers set a word quota for the day. 250 words is a full double-spaced page, for example. So, I want to close, and we'll be sure we have some time for discussion, with 10 caveats for writers. This is, again, in your outline. The most important thing about a plan is having one. The second most important thing about a plan is sticking to it. Those are the only two things you need. You do not need motivation. Many of you heard me speak. I worked pro athletes and actors. People who are not motivated to get up every day and go to the gym, but they do simply because they know it's what they need to do in order to do what's next. You do not have to be motivated to do anything. All you have to have is a plan and to stick to it. Two, write every day. It will help you think like a writer. You enter that state of mind of creative writing. Three, read every day. It will help you think like a writer communicating to a reader. Four, write in a voice that sounds like you. Writing's not a contest. Writing's a transaction between two people, you and the reader. So, sound like yourself and be yourself. If you don't say indeed, well, don't write it. If you don't say one would think, then forget about it. Don't write it. Five, use language simply and warmly. You'll be able to make any subject clear by simply reducing it to good English. A clear, simple sentence is no accident. Six, how you write will be how you're perceived. In fact, your writing may be your only way to introduce yourself to someone whose business, trust, affection, or money is what you want. Seven, this is so important. Keep the burden of clarity yourself. Writing is about creating meaning. Rewriting is about crafting meaning to make it optimally useful and accessible for the reader. Plan from the beginning to keep the burden of the clarity of communication. Don't shift it to the reader or listener. In this way, you maintain the ownership of responsibility to your reader. Think about how many times you've been in a presentation and it was just a little bit too much work, or you're reading an article or a paper, and it's just a little bit too much work, and what do? You vote with your feet. You either put it down or leave, or you start planning what you're going to have for dinner that night. The burden of clarity is not kept by the author, so the author pays but never knows why there's not a response to what was written or what was said. Eight, have the end in mind from the beginning. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind guy, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. Nine, take some positive action toward your goal every day, even if it's just one. At the end of the month, you'll have 30 completed actions. If you write just two paragraphs a day, you'll have 60 paragraphs. And that's a bunch. Now, that's a West Texas literary term, a bunch. 10, decide what you want, believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception. A belief is the mind's command to the brain. our software program that determines our behavior. We now know that beliefs can actually turn genes on or turn them off. Highlight this equation in your outline. Beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. You can change your life by changing your beliefs. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. So, here's a final story that I want to share with you. A destitute young housewife had almost no money. Her book idea came to her when she was on a train, but she didn't have a pen. She was too shy to ask for a pen, so she forgot some of the initial parts of her story. Remember what I told you? Have a dictaphone, have a dictation machine, have a moleskin, have something on you you can write on, not just a sticky note. She couldn't afford a babysitter or a computer, but she had a story to tell, and she was determined to do that. She decided to write. As soon as she started writing, her mother died at age 45 from multiple sclerosis. Her marriage to an abusive husband ended in a divorce. Shortly after that, she had a miscarriage. After that, she got fired from her job and lived on government welfare. She took her baby to a coffee shop in the middle of the afternoon every day and wrote on a legal pad while her baby napped. She did this every day for 4 years. Then, after a great deal of work, she finally found a publisher for Harry Potter. And her last Harry book sold 11 million copies in the first hour. So this is what I want to add to the exercises and the work pages that you've downloaded and printed. Here's what I would recommend that you do and do in the next 24 hours. Sketch two things. Just take two plain sheets of paper, and I don't want to hear that you're not an artist, you can't draw. Sketch it. Sketch two things. One, the cover of your book, title, subtitle, your name. The cover, the title, subtitle, and your name. Second page, the sketch of that book on a shelf at your local bookstore or on a table at the back of the room where you present. That book in context of where you want to see it, bookstore, table, or both. Okay, we're in discussion mode now. I'll ask you to manage the background noise with a mute star six to mute so that there's no background noise, but to unmute whenever you're ready to talk. Thoughts, questions, comments about anything that we've talked about? How does this sound to you in terms of what you had anticipated in terms of beginning to think about just simply the art of writing? Any thoughts? How does this fit with what you're doing and what you've imagined doing?
It feels good. Thank you. It feels useful. It feels inspiring. It connects the brain with the desire and belief. And it creates a little bit of motivation and accountability.
Okay.
Thank you.
It makes me realize that I really need to edit down. I have so much information, you know, it's too much for one book. It needs to be divided into volumes. And the editing is challenging for me. The writing is easy. The editing is hard.
One thing that we all suffer from, it's a particular kind of cognitive bias, and I am even more afflicted. What you describe is the curse of knowledge. It's hard for us to remember what it's like to not know all that we know.
Yes.
And here's the killer pairing. We want to explain it all to somebody so that we can catch them up real quick. So the challenge is to not get caught up in that and to begin back where someone else is. This is the empathic resonance with the reader, to begin with where the reader is, not begin with where we are, and inundate them with all kind of information. And, mm-hmm. and remember thus, this specifically, if information were enough, we'd all be thin, we'd eat mostly vegetables, we'd work out every day, we'd have a whole lot of money saved up for the future, and there'd be a lot of librarians that would be billionaires. So information is not going to do it. Information can inform, by definition, but that's not what your book is about. Your book is about crafting an engaging, comprehensive story that includes all that you want to say, because that's how our brains work. Our brains are wired for story, to be able to engage the right brain, the story, and then the reason and the principles within the story, the left brain. Stories are how we remember, how we make sense of things, how we understand things. It's how we log in information, and that's how we remember. A couple of you have heard this before. One of the first things I did when I made my transition into professional coaching was to work with a mentor who was a professional storyteller. And he said, Dave, I had someone stop me at O'Hare one day to tell me I really wanted to thank you for the story that you told in your presentation 4 years ago. And he said, would you remind me what I talked about? And she said, I don't remember what you talked about, but I'll always remember that story you told. Look at any, go into your bookstore, your local independent bookstore or Barnes & Noble. Go to the nonfiction section. You may want to specialize, business, psychology, but go to the nonfiction section. Pull off any title and look at the first chapter. Here's a guarantee. That first chapter will begin with a story. Every book, you pick 10 books, there's going to be 10 first chapters that begin with a story, if they're doing well enough to be in the bookstore at least. And think about those four questions at the beginning, the single answer. Our brains are wired for story. We want to know what happens next. And dopamine is the pleasure system of anticipation, not of getting something, but of anticipation. So we always need to engage and ask questions. I'm doing a workshop this Friday in Boston for the New England ICF, if any of you happen to be in the area. And I was particularly aware of this because each segment of the workshop, I began with a quiz or with questions to engage the audience in a conversation, in an active participation, to have a conversation with me, some in their heads, some out loud, some by various kinds of activity, but I was especially aware of how useful an idea this is for writing and thinking about how do you actively engage somebody in a participatory kind of workshop to be sure that they're excited and wanting to know what happens next. So if you have other responses, other answers to those two questions, look at your email, send the answer back to me. I'll be eager to hear. We're out of time. We're going to pick up right here next time, and we're going to talk about the craft of writing. So until next week, have a super week, and I look forward to picking up right here. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Joyous.
Então, eu estou fazendo um contato aí com a Embaixada da Argentina, a Caterna de Copal.
Uhum.
É. Porque a melhor época para ir com o pessoal da Argentina é novembro. Vai ficar mais quente. Novembro e dezembro. E vai arrumar uma... Para indicar. Uma... Uma agência de viagens que possa dar um suporte para a gente.